Welcome to Mastering Business Analysis, Episode 9, Exploring the 7 Product Dimensions for Better Requirements Discovery, an interview with Mary Gorman. Let's get started.
Welcome to Mastering Business Analysis, where we bring you the tips, tools, and techniques to succeed in your career as a business analyst. Now here's your host, Dave Sabo.
On today's program, we have Mary Gorman. Mary is Vice President of Quality and Delivery at EBG Consulting and co-authored the book Discover to Deliver. She's an expert in business analysis, facilitation, coaching, and training, and she specializes in business systems and product development. Mary works with global clients, speaks at industry conferences, and writes on requirements and planning topics for the agile, business analysis, and project management communities. Today, Mary will take us on a deep dive of our 7 product dimensions framework and the models we can use to elicit product requirements. Mary, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Now, Mary, I know you've done a lot of work in the business analysis community. I believe you're a contributor to the IIBA's Guide to the Business Analysis Body of Knowledge, as well as I think you contributed to the certification exams. Is that correct?
Yes. That was back in version 2.0 of the BOC and also the first certification exam back in 2007, believe it or not.
Was that 1.6?
Yes. And it was the first exam that was created.
Okay, great. So could you share with us a little bit more about your career, how you got started and what you're doing now?
Well, Dave, I think you and I have had some similar paths. I started out as a programmer also in an insurance company, and I enjoyed that work, and I found that I was really interested in working with people very collaboratively, so I moved into more of an analysis role, did that for many years, and so I have a lot of practitioner experience. I also got into training and facilitating and even got did some methodology work. So that was my past. My present, now I'm a vice president at EBG Consulting with Ellen Gottesdiener. I've been with Ellen for almost 10 years. And we work with teams and leaders, mostly in mid to large organizations. The type of work we do, we're coaching product teams. I love facilitating discovery workshops. And we also help folks learn collaborative practices. And, you know, our theme is basically focusing on developing an understanding of the high-value products that need to be delivered.
Fantastic. So, Mary, I have a few rapid-fire questions for you if you're ready.
Sure.
Okay, first one. How do you explain what a BA does to someone who's not in the industry?
Oh, great. That's like my family. Everyone says, what do you do? And it's sometimes challenging, but I like to think that as collaborators, we enable the stakeholders to effectively communicate and to reach a shared understanding of the business itself and then help to craft successful solutions.
Oh, that's great. That's a great summary. All right. Question number two, who would you say is the most influential person to you within the BA community?
Oh, my goodness. There are a lot of people in the BA community itself. Well, of course, I would have to point to Ellen. I really respect Ellen, especially for her excellent collaboration skills. And there are a number of folks that, you know, we stand on the shoulders of Carl Wiegers and many folks like that. So I think it's very important that we remember our past as well as our current leaders. And I would share on a personal note, back in the day, you may remember Ed Yorden and all his excellent work. And I followed Ed very closely and read his books carefully. And when I got to meet him face to face a couple years ago, it was a great opportunity. We just clicked. And there's so many of the basic things that we need to do to successfully analyze business, I think are golden. They're things we need to do. So I'm sort of rambling here because I could say so many things, but I will express that there are other folks who may not be considered leaders in business analysis, but are very important to our work. And people like Lisa Crispin, who is known for her agile testing work, and having opportunities to share how we can be better doing our analysis work by bringing in other disciplines. So I want to try to have sort of a big tent view of this. So those are just a couple of thoughts.
Perfect. I love it. Okay, last question. I know you work with a lot of BAs in different companies and helping them along their journeys. What do you see the big thing that everyone is struggling with right now?
One big thing. Oh, my goodness. I think many of them are struggling with how do I participate on an agile team on a personal level? And how do I bring my skills to bear and what is the work that I do? So I think that's the one thing, big thing from a personal level. On the organizational level, one big thing is how do we take a more holistic look at our business? And instead of looking at one isolated product or going out and trying to buy one particular application and install it, understanding the business from a value perspective, say even a value stream perspective, that's to me something that's a real opportunity and something that a number of organizations are starting to realize.
Okay, fantastic. So let's get into the meat here. In Discover to Deliver, which you co-authored with Ellen, you provide a framework for really discovering and developing that shared understanding of what the product requirements are. And one of the practices that you mention in the book is the use of an options board. Can you share with us a little bit about what an options board is?
Okay. So first of all, Dave, I want to be really clear. The options board is simply a means to an end. It's like a tool or a framework because the end result is, as we all agree, we have to identify those high-value product needs for our next planning period. And many times we don't have an organized way to do that. So we take the options board as a way to enable the stakeholders to have some rich, deep conversations and yet quickly be able to take those conversations and synthesize them, if you will, as they explore and evaluate product options. Because so many times people will have a meeting and they will, you know, at the end of the meeting, well, what did we do? And we don't want to use the D word. We don't want to say, how do we document the meeting, right?
Right.
So I'm sure you, Dave, and many of your listeners have survived, you know, a number of traditional development efforts where we all struggled to analyze and define all of the product options up front. Well, we know that in today's world, whether you call your work agile or not, we just can't wait 1 to 2, 3 years or something to do the upfront analysis. So to get to your question, the options board is a tool that we can use to explore product options. What are all of the possibilities? I hate to use the word all, but what are the options for our product? And then very quickly determine which of those options are essential for the next release or the next iteration. So how do we do that? You know, how do we look at all of the options? So the options board typically is in a meeting place and it's on a wall, ideally. It's about 12 to 15 feet wide or sometimes wider. And there are, if you will, sections of the options board. On the far left, we have information about the product itself, the vision, goal, objectives, risks, assumptions. We also indicate who are the stakeholders or what we call partners, who are the business people involved in this product, who are the customers, and who are the technology folks. And that left side of the options board becomes our touchstone. All the work we do in trying to understand the product needs to be aligned with what we call value and the partners. So that's the left side. And then the rest of the board would be in, we use columns to indicate for the 7 product dimensions. Each dimension has a column. And what we do is we list what those options are, say for the user, and we might do some sketches, a particular model about a user, or any of the other dimensions. And as we visualize this work, as we have people standing at the wall, pointing, moving post-its around, amending a sketch or something, they're having this opportunity to converse in this more structured way, and it's really self-documenting. Many times what we'll do is take photographs of the options board and use those as a form of communication for folks who aren't there. You can see some samples of options board on our website, discovertodeliver.com. And if you look on the resource page, you'll see a couple of samples. And you can also, on the resources page, there's something called visual language. And you can actually download and print what we call the options board kit, which is all the symbols that you'd hang on the options board from the left all the way to the right. And it gives you some sense of how to set it up. So basically, coming full circle, the options board is a means to have us collaborate with the stakeholders and quickly explore and evaluate what we could possibly build. So possibilities, options, we use those words synonymously.
Awesome. There's a ton of great resources on your website, I know. Now, I love the way the options board gives that visual that everyone in the room can see and collaborate on. It has that information radiator quality that we use so much in Agile. So that's a great approach. What about for distributed teams or virtual teams? Can you use an options board or something similar?
Absolutely. It takes a little bit of choreography, if you will, and some flexibility. I was recently working with a team, and we were in the United States, the East Coast of the United States, and we had an options board set up in our space. And we had people dialed in from Belgium and from British Columbia. And so, you know, quite differences, you can imagine our timing, who had to get up early and who had to stay up late. And we had someone who was using a webcam. We also had a version of the options board as people elicited options. We placed them in the tool, which happened to be, you know, a souped up version of a spreadsheet. So it was a way to keep everyone up to date. Not perfect. And of course, when we did our retrospective, as we always do at the end of a workshop, the preference would have been to have everybody there. It's not always possible in today's world. And so sure. This became a means. And there are, you know, other tools. We at EBG try to be agnostic about tools. We don't endorse any particular tool, but we have helped folks take their existing tools and shape them so that they can easily use the 7 product dimensions in their work.
Okay, excellent. Now, I've done a lot of work with story mapping to help identify, you know, what the user flow is and help decompose the larger epics into smaller user stories, determine what's a minimum viable product. Mm-hmm. How does using user stories differ from the 7 product dimensions?
That's a great question. Thank you. What we do with the 7 product dimensions is to explore each one of them. And then based on the high value across the 7 dimensions, we're writing stories. So often a story is perceived, you know, people use the standard syntax as a user, I need to do something so that. And looking at it in that way, it basically is only indicating 2 of the 7 product dimensions. It's who is the user, which is one of our product dimensions, and what is the action, which is another product dimension. But typically, at the surface level, a story does not get into the details of the data requirements that we know as business analysts we have to understand, the control requirements, meaning policies or business rules specific to that particular story. Those are just the functional user, action, data, and control. And so many stories, user stories, are not including those data and control options. And then there are 3 more product dimensions that often aren't considered when we write stories or have the conversation about a story. And that would be what interfaces are involved with the story, what environment will the story be. If the person is, the user is in a particular location, that's one aspect of environment. Another is the development and operational environment for that story, like what platform, what browsers. And then lastly, the 7th product dimension is around quality attributes. You know, the performance, how quickly for this story would we have to have a response time, the testability of the story. So stories are obviously meant to be a promise for a conversation. That was the original intention.
Right.
But many times, I'm not sure in your experience, the conversation doesn't always lead to enough specificity to enable a team to start working on it. So we like to make sure our stories are fully supported by a holistic understanding across those seven dimensions.
That's great. And I could definitely see how looking at it from those seven dimensions would uncover some things that might have been missed by just using a regular story map. Great.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, the story map, some of the challenges with a story map would be when you think about what is the precondition for a story and the postcondition. And a story map basically gives you a left to right view of those pre and post conditions, sort of. But it's not going to be, it doesn't enable you, say you have a multiple enabling situation. One story sets up the state so these three other stories could happen in any particular order. It's sort of awkward to do that on a story map. So we tend to take, in those cases, when we have the kind of complexity, we'll, you know, use a flow diagram, some sort of a, you know, a process flow to show that. Again, many analysis tools that we've used for a while, we need to look at from an agile perspective and find lightweight ways. We don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
Similarly, there are a number of other great models that we find really are powerful. And for business analysis work, bringing those to the conversation sometimes can be very energizing.
Okay. So in your book, I know you talk a lot about what models or techniques or tools to use to discover requirements from each of the product dimensions. Can we spend a little time going into maybe one or two tools or techniques you'd use in each dimension to create that shared understanding and uncover any requirements?
Sure, sure. Well, I listed a few for the action dimension, you know, some sort of a process flow diagram, and some people would use a story map. Some people might use value stream map, but a couple of others, say, for example, the interface dimension, a context diagram, I find often just a great conversation extender, if you will. And it also helps us to quickly visualize the interfacing systems. And that often, again, most of our work is around products that are very complex, and being able to understand those interfaces sooner rather than later. That's not something we want to discover too late in the game. And then at some point for your interface, you probably want to do a prototype, whether it's of your windows or reports or mapping to another system. So the interface dimension has a number of powerful tools. And I would say, I'm not sure, Dave, I'd appreciate your thoughts around data. Back in maybe the 80s, from a business analysis perspective, data was considered king or queen, whichever you wish.
Right.
And if you were a business analyst, you had to know how to read and participate in a logical data model. I'm not sure that's the case today. What are you finding?
I'm finding it is to some degree, maybe not to that level, but certainly I'm seeing a lot of data transformation type projects when we're going from one system to another, and there needs to be some kind of data mapping. So certainly understanding data dictionaries and how the data is really used is important in what I've seen. Maybe not to an extreme extent as it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, but certainly I think there's a need, especially with the focus on big data now. Yeah. I know data is kind of at the forefront of everyone's mind. So understanding how the data is used and how we can use it going forward is certainly important.
I agree. I think the Agile community needs to probably have a little more understanding in ways to effectively communicate the data requirements, you know, the structure rules and all of that. And the other, get back to your question, another model that we find really, really helpful is a state diagram to think about the life cycle states of an event-rich data entity. So, you know, drawing on our insurance background, Dave, I'm sure you think about a claim. What are the life cycle states of a claim? And being able to understand that, visualize that, often throws open the doors about the possibilities and shows us, you know, pretty quickly the complexity, which then, of course, leads us back to what actions move that data thing from state to state and what rules are there. So related to a specific state. So very, very powerful tools that I think are should be in every BA's toolkit.
Absolutely. Use those all the time. Mm-hmm. So what about for the constraint type dimension? How do we uncover those?
Are you thinking about business rules or policies?
Those would be great examples, yes. I see a lot of projects where people forget that dimension or even the kind of non-functional piece.
Well, let me just quickly mention, when we say control, we're talking about we use a stop sign as a symbol. Each one of our seven dimensions has a symbol and a color. We try to use these semantically. It's been really cool when we're working with an international team. It helps in communicating. But in any case, getting back to control. So the stop sign, stop. We can't proceed until we verify that this business rule has been checked. So for complex or sets of rules, we might use decision tables or decision trees. But I think what you were referring to is something we call quality attributes.
Right.
Yes. And so there aren't such models per se about quality attributes. And we in our we have a meta model for each one of the dimensions, I'm sure you remember. And when we look at the meta model for quality attributes, there are actually 17 different kinds of quality attributes, and things like usability, security, safety. One thing we like to use, we found very helpful, is something called Planguage or Planning Language, P Language, Tom Gill's work, to be able to clearly specify what these constraints are. So whether it's the performance of the product or availability. Again, I would like to emphasize here, Dave, and I'm sure you've seen this, how sometimes from a business analysis perspective, it's like, oh, well, that's not what we do. Someone else does that for us. There can be some really insightful aspects that we can bring to bear as business analysts, adding to that conversation about these quality attributes. So we like to have a partnership of folks actually defining the language together. So what the business thinks is the constraint for availability probably is not the same as what the technology folks think.
Sure.
So having them work together and having some business analysis mixed in, I think it has shown in our client work to be a very, very powerful way for a shared understanding. Business learns more about the technology constraints, and then, of course, technology hear what the business constraints are.
That's a great approach. When I was looking at the seven product dimensions in your book, I immediately thought, oh, you always start with the user dimension. And when I started reading about when you use each, I was really blown away because it really opened my mind. Can you talk a little bit about maybe one or two and in what circumstances you would start with that dimension?
Sure. And you're right. In our book, for each one of these seven dimensions, we have a specific section that talks about, you know, when you would lead with a particular dimension. And I would also want to make it clear that let's take an example about data. We've been talking about data, and there are times of the seven dimensions you may want to what we call lead with data. So you might get started your analysis with data because your project is about business intelligence or data warehouse or querying or reporting. But very, very quickly, you need to swivel and make sure you understand, well, what are the actions that would be involved and what interfaces are needed and who is actually going to be using that data? And are there any controls or environmental aspects or quality attributes? All the other six. So we want to be aware that it may be practical to start your work with one of the seven dimensions, any one of the seven, but then be very quick to understand you need to have that holistic approach. Now, you asked me for a couple. The other one I'd suggest is the control dimension. Remember the one around policies or rules. And if you're working, say, in a claim adjudication application or credit checking or fraud detection, those are so rich with the type of regulatory and rule aspect. But again, You've got to be able to swivel and say, claim adjudication. Well, what actions are being taken and what's the data involved and who are the users and so forth?
Sure. And that really opens the door to talking about those other dimensions. So that's a great way to start.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Awesome. So Mary, thanks for sharing the great information. Just one more question before we close out. What, in your opinion, is one thing that a BA can do or implement today that they'll see positive value immediately?
Wow, you are asking tough questions. I think I'd focus on two C words, being as collaborative as possible, collaborating as partners with the business and technology, and being creative. So if you can bring, say I mentioned the example of a state diagram, bring one model to the table, one model you feel relatively comfortable with, use it with people, get people to collaborate. It's amazing how it can change the atmosphere, the dynamic of the team itself. And feeling like you're the person that's helping the team to do that, I think you can start getting some positive results quickly.
Fantastic. So Mary, if people want to learn more about you or what you're doing now, what's the best approach?
Oh, there are a couple of channels. Certainly, I'm on LinkedIn. People can find me. There are lots of Mary Gormans, but I'm out there for EBG Consulting. People can reach me at mary@ebgconsulting.com. That's my email. Certainly, Discover to Deliver, our website for the book. We keep updating that with new information. We post there. We write quite frequently. We have a blog. So ebgconsulting.com is another channel for us reaching, and through you, Dave, hopefully.
Definitely. I'll put links on my website. And as I mentioned before, the discovertodeliver.com just has a wealth of information on it. Just a fantastic resource. You could also get Discover to Deliver there. And we do have a discount code for that. So fantastic resource.
Well, thank you so much.
No problem, Mary. Thank you for everything you do and for all the value that you gave us in this call today.
It was my pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
And that was our interview with Mary Gorman. Mary gave us some really great practical advice on how to use models and visuals to create a shared understanding and really use the 7 product dimensions to uncover requirements that we may have missed for the product. Some really great things that we can apply today. For show notes and links to information in this episode, visit masteringbusinessanalysis.com/episode9. And don't forget, for a limited time, you can get a 20% discount on Mary and Ellen's book, Discover to Deliver. Just go to discovertodeliver.com and enter coupon code MBAD2D. That's MBA as in Mastering Business Analysis, D, the number 2, D. And you'll get 20% off their excellent book, Discover to Deliver. And finally, I'll leave you with a quote from Robert Kiyosaki. He said, "Most businesses think that product is the most important thing, but without great leadership, mission, and a team that delivers results at a high level, even the best product won't make a company successful." Thank you, and I hope you'll join us on our next episode.
Thank you for listening to Mastering Business Analysis. Visit our website at masteringbusinessanalysis.com for more tools to advance in your career as a business analyst.